Captain Deanna Gephardt and Jim Porter of Immigrations and Customs Enforcement implementing an electronic health records system. And Captain Gephardt, I want to start with you. First of all, congratulations on your promotion. And I want to start with you explaining what your original need was and how you evaluated where you were going to go from where you started this process.
Oh, certainly, certainly. Happy to share the information. It's been a little bit of a long road, but we certainly are bearing the fruit of the of that effort at this point. We started about 5 years ago, probably a little longer than that even, and we started looking at, you know, how can we incorporate within our system, you know, some efficiencies that would help us to be able to provide better continuity of care and better services to our population that we had in custody. We previously had tried to implement a system about 10 years ago. The technology wasn't quite where it needed to be at that time, and it certainly wasn't an actual electronic health record of the time either. It was a standalone system that basically was a managed care system. It would help to give us some reporting and some things like that, but it didn't help to track and measure care or quality measures to the point that we can today. So we outlined a list of about 2,200 requirements, and in those requirements, it definitely spelled out all of the things that we felt as a system that we needed in order to be able to provide that continuity of care, to address the issues for the population that we serve, and to ensure that the quality measures for healthcare were able to be tracked and to be maintained. So that was kind of our starting point, and that's where we built from.
When you say 2,200 requirements, that to me sounds like a ton. Is that typical for a system development of this type?
I can't speak to that. I can let Jim speak to that. But I can say that with our system is very complex because we have such a high turnover, a high movement through the system. And because the detention environment itself, you know, there's a lot of movement and a lot of tracking of different ages and that. So when it comes to the healthcare portion of it, the requirements kind of leap off the page at you. And it really, you know, to ensure that we're providing care that's persistent or that's consistent with the community standard for age-related issues or for gender-related issues, it's important to capture all of those elements as well. So that's where we kind of focused and started out with.
Well, Jim, before you address the requirements issue, let's pull back and kind of get at where you and I started this conversation several weeks ago, which is I didn't even know ICE had to maintain electronic health records. What's the population whose health records you're managing through this system?
The population is for the detainees in ICE custody, and Captain Gephardt could probably expand on that a little bit more, but it's mostly for the facilities where we have IHSE staff providing the medical care.
The population, of course, is you know, anybody who would have to be detained for any reason under immigration law. And so we have to, you know, are obligated to provide the same level of quality care that anybody else would receive in the community.
So, Jim, tell me about the business case that you developed and your team developed to decide how you were going to implement these requirements and what you expected the vendor that you eventually wound up with to be able to do for you.
Well, when we started the program officially, it was about 3.5 or 4 years ago, it was deemed on the major acquisition oversight list with DHS, and we had to establish a series of formal documents, including a mission need statement, a concept of operations, alternative analysis. So there's a lot of metrics supporting the decision to establish the program, and one of the things that stood out was just that the previous set of systems really was duplicative in nature, so that medical processes, procedures, labs, x-rays, everything of that nature were being duplicated as detainees moved from one facility to the next. So as you can imagine, that's very cost prohibitive. So the metrics really spoke to themselves, and it took us about 2 years to get the program through official approval through the department. And once we were able to do that, we were able to release the solicitation, which we had also been working on in parallel, and industry had responded back. Through through a number of different mechanisms. We went initially out with an RFI. We also came back and said our budget is constrained. Can you implement the system with our budget, which was approximately about $14 million for the entire system? And we received a lot of positive response from industry saying that it can be done and they can meet the 2,200 requirements or a high percentage of them. So we knew we were in a pretty good position to acquire the system and implement it, especially given that what we were really trying to acquire here is a certified medical record system, something that's used throughout industry. I don't think we're trying to invent anything new here.
Absolutely. We initially had a little bit of pushback on, you know, why require a certified system versus doing your own build. Well, obviously, a COTS product or a system that's already out there in the community, we did a lot of market research to prove that in fact, this was probably the best way to go, and it has worked out really well for us. The system that we the systems we looked at initially in our market research, probably many of them could have been adapted, but this particular product was very configurable, was based on a configuration that was set up for detention or corrections, and has really been very user-friendly for us too. We've had to make a few changes to our processes and that, but we've been able to do that and get it implemented with only a few pain points.
The requirements number that you talk about, 2,200, mm-hmm. to get to the end point that you have, which is a success, strikes me that I imagine you had a very controlled management environment in place to make sure that those requirements were all being implemented at the same time so that you got the finished product that you want. Is that fair to say?
That is very fair to say. We had, you know, full support of those above me in the food chain, and this really was an effort that I can honestly say would not have been as successful as it has been if we had not had so many dedicated clinicians that were willing to put in so many additional hours in the evenings and weekends and nights, and anytime we could squeeze phone calls in to have these long discussions about, you know, what's the best process flow. And we did design our 2,200 requirements around workflows. So there were not just these random piles of requirements. It was really determinedly directed toward actual workflows that we needed to have in place in our system.
Was this what people are now calling agile development, where you would do a piece and test it and do a piece and test it and do a piece and test it? Is that the kind of approach that it sounds like that's the way that you tried to do this, Captain?
Well, actually, with a COTS product, you don't want to change the you want to change configuration, but you don't want to change the actual shell product, because you want to be able to take advantage of future development that could be provided to you at either no cost or low cost. And in order to do that, you have to be fair to that vendor and say, okay, well, we may have some little tweaking that needs to be done here or there, but, you know, we don't really want that specialized system because the government's going to have to pay for it. And we don't want that to happen. We feel that there is adequate technology out there now, and I think we've proven that with the procurement and the implementation that we've done. There's really good products out there. There's great technology out there. And by requiring that certification through the Office of the National Coordinator, that's a community standard certification. And the beauty is, every time that certification changes, these vendors will then have to maintain that certification. We, the government, don't have to maintain it.
Jim, Captain Gephardt talked about the clinicians that were involved in this process. You and I, when we first talked about this, you were very eloquent in speaking about the effectiveness and efficiency of the end users that helped you walk through this whole process. You did it all together, was the way you described it to me. Tell me about that process, not just at the end where they turned it on and said, yeah, this looks fine, and not just the clinicians that Captain Gephardt talked about, but all of the people that use the system and how they've been involved from beginning to end.
We have had just excellent project officers. The first project officer that we had in helping the requirement side of it and implementing them, Lieutenant Smith, he was able to work through with the workflows with us. So we had 9 initial workflows described, and we took the requirements and broke them down into each of those 9 different workflows. Throughout the process, what we had done in the schedule is establish key milestone markers. So every 3 months or so, we'd see a proof of concept with particular workflows being demonstrated by the vendor for leadership. So there was definitely some skin in the game to get these workflows completed by certain timelines. And I will say that the project officer and all the supporting team were just fantastic in making sure that we weren't going down what I'd call rabbit holes or taking a wrong turn, but they were very focused on getting those workflows completed.
Jim, you told me about the operational requirements document that you use to measure progress throughout the system. Either one of you, tell me what that document did and why it was the tool that got you to the success point that you're at today.
Well, the big document was the requirements traceability matrix, mm-hmm. and that's where all the 2,200 documents are in. The operational requirements document for us helped demonstrate for the department that we had an effective and suitable system to deploy in operations, and that had a lot of key performance parameters such as system uptime, number of concurrent users. There's a lot of different metrics, including the certification. That helped quantify that this is the correct product for us to deploy in operations.
Tell me about the systems integration here and the role that your vendors played in helping you to get this off the ground and get it done the way that it's done.
The system integrator that we had, which was Harris, they were supported by subcontractors, including eClinical Works for the software, LSI for the training, and CGI for the FedRAMP cloud hosting environment. So we really went to one system integrator, which was Harris, to kind of coordinate all of the different moving parts there. So we didn't have to play as much of a role trying to coordinate all those pieces, and they were able to basically control their own destiny as far as getting the system deployed. And that worked out very well for us.
How did you make that decision to go that route as far as a systems integrator rather than doing it yourself, or what was that decision making process like?
We actually, during the solicitation process, offered the vendors options, so we could go software as a service, commercial off the shelf, or even government off the shelf software. And what we received back from Harris, which was the winning vendor, was that they wanted to go through software as a service. So we really let the decision-making process up to the vendor community on what they wanted to implement for us.
Captain, what does the end user now have that he or she didn't have when you started? What capabilities have they gained, or what efficiencies have they gained? Things like that.
Oh, absolutely. Well, just to start off with, when we receive individuals into our clinics now, especially their initial visit, which we call an intake, those are able to be done because the information is already preloaded into the law enforcement database, and we're able to pull it right over. So all of the biometrics and everything that we would pull over, date of birth and country and name and all this, A numbers, etc., is all standardized. There's far less issues with entering the wrong data, having the wrong data to begin with. And so that right off the bat has made our lives much easier. Secondly, and probably the most important thing to clinicians and to the medical department here that we are looking at constantly, is the fact that, when you do receive a person in, you can then look and see if they've had a previous record, if they were transferred from another location, if they had been in our custody before and we actually had a record on them before. We'll be able to pull that information up and base our care off of that. So if we have a known chronic care illness, if they were just transferred from another location, we can see what care was provided for them. When did they have their last labs drawn? Did they have a chest x-ray? What type of care needs to happen now? Do they have medications from their previous stay? Can we use those medications on a continuous basis, or do we need to replace them with other meds? So when we didn't have that before, we might have went ahead and ordered labs, we might have done a chest x-ray on them, and we might have issued a whole other set of medications. So were those things necessary and needed? They are if you don't have that information. But if you have the information to work off of, then clinicians can make good determinations for the patients and make sure that the continuity of care is there while also being effective and efficient.
Final question, and I'll let either one of you or both of you tell me about this. But you and the two of us, the three of us are going to sit down, and I'm starting down this road at my agency. What are the steps that you learned that you should make sure that I know so that I can reach the same successful outcome that you've reached?
I would say, if I can start first, Jim, I would say the first thing you have to have is you have got to have management on board. We're fortunate here because our assistant director, Dr. Kramer, is also a physician by background. And so he understands the importance of what we're doing. And he, while we keep him informed, and I certainly owe so much to the clinicians out there, they're the ones who've done all this work. They're the ones who have made this possible. Their dedication to getting this done, you can't pay people just to do that. It is something that they really, truly felt that we needed as a system, and they're the ones who put blood, sweat, and tears into this. And I certainly give them so much credit for it. But you have to have management on board. If the management doesn't allow, you know, the folks to sit down and have these brainstorming sessions and all the time and dedication it took to get to this point, you won't get there successfully.
Jim?
Yeah, I would say the one big important piece is taking that time for the planning. And I know, Captain Gephardt, you pushed me quite a bit early on to say, you know, what is the plan and when am I going to get what I want? And and really spending that quality time to really map everything out over 24 months was absolutely critical. And the other part of it is defining the scope and delivery timelines. We were able to do a firm fixed price contract here, which is, I think, pretty incredible. But the way that was successful was that we defined those 2,200 requirements, and we spent a lot of time doing that. So there wasn't a lot of ambiguity. I mean, maybe there's a couple things here and there, but overall, it was very clear what we wanted to accomplish. And I would also agree that, you know, making this a partnership and not an us, them, or what have you, but really involving business sponsors, information technology, independent testing systems integrators, and the product vendors, just having us all together working as one team, I think really helped benefit us. And lastly, I think Captain Gephardt mentioned, you know, the executive buy-in and awareness, and then we were relentless in our communication. So every single day we'd have a stand-up call on where we stood with things, and it really held everyone accountable. I think that was very useful for us to get to the finish line here.
Jim, am I oversimplifying it a little bit by coming to one theme? Because I hear a theme in both what Captain Gephardt and you have talked about as the success points here, and it sounds to me like you can crystallize them all by saying just setting very clear expectations. You talked about setting expectations on timelines and capabilities and delivery and all of those issues, and it just and communications. You set an example of how you expected communications to happen, and it sounds like those are the dissonance points in places where we see not so successful efforts, and it sounds like those were what you managed to bring to this success here.
Yeah, I would think that's a very good point, and to add to that, it was that attitude, I think, from day one it's not something we backed into. We had our goals set up front, and making that clear with the vendor. I think they said that once they got on board that we've been waiting to drag race for a little while now. So,
absolutely. And I do want to say that, you know, this is one success that I think DHS can really hang their hat on. It has been a great working opportunity to really establish how a project should actually work and what it should reflect. And OCIO, you know, Jim has been probably the best program manager I'll ever work with, but he really has been very knowledgeable, is able to really kind of grab hold of those pertinent points, holding the vendor accountable and making sure that there's good follow-up and the contracting officers are there and on time. And so it's been a large play that he has maneuvered, and I think he's done a great job with it.